Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berling, along with our co-host today, Juliet Lamar.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Today, we're joined by a Brooklyn, New Yorker. She is a full-time juggler. What I mean to say is she's an actress, model, wife, mother, blogger, not necessarily in that order. She started modeling at age 12 with Ford Models and has graced the pages of international campaigns for Elle, Marie Claire, GQ Italy, and today, the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. After transitioning into acting, she relocated from New York to Los Angeles, where she booked her breakout role in ABC's longstanding daytime soap opera, All My Children, my personal favorite soap opera, and went on to appear in several memorable roles in television and film. She recently founded the online lifestyle blog Made, and she is currently cooking up her second baby, Denise Fossey. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, guys.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, especially you got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's never boring in my world.
I know it's not boring in your world. And you made time for us, which I'm very grateful for.
Anything for you.
You're multi-talented, big-hearted. You're a driven person. And every time I'm around you, I learn at least one new thing. And I'm inspired by you. So I want to, in the first half of our episode, find out where you came from. How did you become you? And then in the second half, talk about your wild first birth story and pregnancy and what you have stored up for number two. How do you start modeling at age 12? I tried. Nobody cared.
So it turns out that my mom had been collecting business cards since I was about 6 months old. My parents were together at the time, and Pampers offered my parents a contract. And unfortunately, my father, who wasn't around growing up but was around then, decided that he wasn't really into it. So my mom was like, okay, we're not going to do that. But she just kept on running into agents and, you know, bookers and stuff like that over the course of many, many years. And finally, when I was 12, after I did ballet for this, you know, a month, after I did piano for a month, she was like, do you want to try this? And I was like, sure, cool, let's try it. I didn't really understand it. I didn't really look at a magazine and go, you know, oh, how do you get in a magazine? But they sent my photos out, and my mom called me one day and was like, oh, my God, Eileen Ford just got on the phone with us. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, yeah, you know, Cindy and Claudia and Naomi. Like, okay. And we went in, and they signed me right away. I did see a few other places before at the time. Agencies didn't really know what to do with mixed girls. So Ford was really taking a big leap. It was very much a blonde, blue-eyed market, and maybe they had one very strong African-American girl or woman on their board. So Ford was kind of the leader in bringing in the ambiguous-looking model into marketing.
High five to Ford Models. That's fantastic.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, you're a person I would take a chance on.
Thanks.
You have a great energy. Did you have that as a kid also? Like, you just, there's like a little aura around you.
Oh, my God, be careful. I'm pregnant and hormonal. I'll start crying.
Ah.
You're so sweet. You know, I was raised by a lot of strong women. Like I said, my dad wasn't around, and that meant everyone kind of played a bigger role than just an aunt or just my grandmother. My family really all came together to support my mom, who was very young when she had me. Even though I was planned, she was, in my mind, way too young to have a child.
How young is that?
She was 19 when I was born.
Oh, wow.
And I think about, you know, all the things that I do with my four-year-old now and, you know, obviously getting ready to have another one. And I really don't know how she did it at 19. And
so you don't want to be a grandmother in 15 years?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I'm not going to say never, never. You don't want to judge your future child and what she might do with her life. But, you know, it's tough. Being 30-something years old and being a mother is really, really tough.
Yeah. It's hard at a young age like that.
Yeah.
Where did your modeling career take you?
So I modeled all the way through high school. And then, of course, I felt like I was missing something. You know, everybody was applying for their first job at Banana Republic, The Gap, and I was traveling the world, which is amazing, but I also was like, oh my gosh, but I want a job in retail. Mm-hmm. So I stopped for a while. I opened up the first Zara in the country, which was in Soho, and then moved into working on a flagship store on Madison Avenue called Ann Taylor. No one knew anything about my past modeling career. I was also in school at the time, studying business and management. And I did that for a little while, and then I realized that it's very different and very difficult to go from like making a couple hundred bucks an hour to making 16 bucks an hour. And putting myself through private university was expensive. So then I kind of tried to do a little bit of all of those things. Yeah. Got really sick, pneumonia for 2 months. And then my mom, who's like my biggest backer and biggest pusher, was like, what about school? Okay, then I was in school. And what about modeling? You know, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And then so I decided, you know what, I'm going to go back to modeling and start studying acting.
Oh. So you gave up business.
Yeah. In a way. But, you know, those classes were so informative. All my bookers my entire life, even my in my digital space, working in the digital space right now, my managers and that arena are like, you're so good with your books and I've got my receipts and, you know, you really learn how to, you know, run a business, which is essentially what I do now. So it's all come full circle, but I definitely walked away from it to do something that seemed a little bit more glamorous.
It's show business, right? I mean, there is a business to the
aspect,
show.
Of course, yeah.
It was, yeah. When you're in high school and you're modeling, is that weird in terms of the other kids that are...
When I was in junior high school, because I started at 12, we tried to keep it very much a secret. But what happened was I was the only one allowed at school to have a beeper, and I would often get pulled out of class.
A beeper.
Yeah, which was really cool. I was like, and that's why I stuck with it, really. I was like, this is so cool. Like, I get to have, like, a pager, and I get to leave school. And I was just luckily one of those kids who could just read something and get it right away. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so school was a little boring because we were working at a certain pace. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, I could leave early and still make my A's and, like, go to be on this photo shoot. This is kind of fun. And kids started to think that I was sick, that I was always going to the doctor. And then I did a big Macy's campaign for, I don't remember, it was like Mother's Day and I was the daughter. And then that kind of changed everything.
Yeah. Surprise.
Everyone kind of thought, I was like, that's not me. In fact, they changed my eye color to be brown so I looked more like the mom. So I was totally like, guys, look at this girl in this photo. That's not me. And junior high school was okay. In high school, the morning that I came, and everyone and anyone who is from Dewey will remember this, when I came in one morning and someone had plastered the whole second floor locker bay with an ad campaign that I was in, like photocopied and put it everywhere, and I was like mortified.
Oh, my.
So were you proud of the campaign, but then just because you were being called
out,
it was mortifying?
Yeah, because it was very different. And
what was the purpose in doing that?
Yeah, what are the... Kids
embarrassing somebody.
Oh, I forgot about high school.
Yeah, high school.
They tease you like you're too pretty. You're like, I know. You're like right. Just because someone's saying it.
So it's crazy, right? But that really was the reason. Okay, so my mom had a reason for wanting to keep it. You know, my mom was concerned about bullies and stuff like that in junior high school. When I got to high school, it was already enough of, I'm a very approachable person, but people might not look at me that way, and so I had already a stigma. There was a stigma already, so, gosh, all I needed for them to do was to find out this to create more of an issue with other, you know, females, unfortunately. I never had any problem with the boys. They were, like, always super cool, but...
Did you have a specific way of dealing with it?
I did get into a really big fight in high school.
That's one way.
Yeah. And then eventually I had some really great people that just kind of took me in and we just formed a tight crew. And that's pretty much, I learned at a very early age that your tribe will change everything and how important it is to really be there for the people who are there for you and what true friendship means.
Were there other models your age that you got
to?
No, you didn't have.
Oh, yeah. Not at my school, though. Yeah. There's a few of them, Alex, Kim, who I used to work with all the time, and it was kind of like I was the ambiguous girl. Kim was the blonde, blue-eyed girl, and Alex was the Asian, Euro-Asian kind of girl, and we'd work on, like, a bunch of campaigns together, and they're still two very good friends of mine to this day.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
You should do a shoot.
Yeah, we should.
Do they have kids?
Alex has, like, 5 kids.
No, wow.
You're catching up.
No, I'm good. She's so excited. She called me when I announced, and she was like, oh, my God. I was like, girl, I'm not catching up to you. So this is it.
Oh,
we're good after
you never
this.
Know. One set of accidental twins, and you're almost there.
Oh, my gosh. Don't wish that on me.
Sorry. I think you'd do great with twins. So how did your foray into, from modeling into television or acting in general go?
So when I was modeling, I did a lot of beauty campaigns. Traditional modeling, not kind of what today is, but when there were just agencies and just print campaigns and just runway shows, was very much about your height. And so if you wanted to do fashion, they wanted you to be minimum 5'8.5", 5'9". And at some point, we realized that wasn't going to happen for me. But I had a very successful career in the beauty department. Hair, skin care, makeup, nails, that kind of stuff. And I moved into commercials. So I worked with a lot of amazing brands like L'Oreal and Garnier and Bobbi Brown and MAC. And then
all my favorites.
Yeah. You use them all the time, right?
Yeah.
And commercials really gave me the first opportunity to see what motion was like. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was that there was a lot more fun to be had. There was an opportunity to show personality. And
are you speaking in those commercials or are you moving?
Some of them.
Some of them.
And you actually had an opinion. You could actually have an opinion on a motion set, right? So a director might come to you and say, like, what feels comfortable versus being on a photo set where they've given you this dress and they're like, you can't move because it's basically stitched on you and it's so small and we just need you to be, you know, in these four positions till we get the shot kind of thing.
I could see it when you do those positions. But nobody at home can hear it.
And, you know, I started to do some thinking, and the truth of the matter is I've always been a storyteller. And to this day, and even with what I do, right, I love telling the story behind the visual. And I was the little girl who, like my little girl today, is like, look at me, look what I can do, and wait, watch this and listen to this. And so I realized that acting was going to be a way to share my personality, have a bigger say, be more than just a face. And if I could take it to a certain level, that I would be able to have an influence on people. And I think that even before we use that word so loosely, that's always kind of been my calling. How can I influence or inspire people?
And did you then start studying acting?
Like yeah. Of course, I studied with some of the best people. I also studied for 3 years with Sam Schwa, who passed away a couple years ago, unfortunately. But he was the best speech coach in all of the business because I had a very New York accent, which my husband says that you can totally hear when I'm upset or drunk, which I haven't been drunk in a while. But
I noticed he didn't say you haven't been upset in a
while. Oh, yeah. No, he heard that yesterday. He heard that. I pulled that out yesterday. But, yeah, I still say draw and caw and stuff like that.
I'm a New Yorker. I don't talk like that, but.
Yeah, exactly
I used
that.
To.
Yeah. Did you go to a speech coach to give it
No,
to
I went to Georgia, actually. I lived in Atlanta for 5 years.
Did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I lived in Atlanta for 2 years.
That's why I went there, but when I couldn't find you.
Atlanta's tough.
They don't love New Yorkers too much, so you sort of have to mellow out that New York accent.
Yeah, Atlanta's tough. I spent 2 years there when I shot Single Ladies.
Oh.
Yep.
It's an interesting place. I liked it. I really liked being in Atlanta. It just was a little adaptation. And then we went to Nebraska. So went from New York City to Atlanta to Nebraska, which was thank goodness because if we'd just gone from New York City to Nebraska, we probably just would have died because of the pace change.
Yeah.
You know, so we had the buffer of Atlanta. I like Nebraska too. But it's when I got to Nebraska, because in New York we have four seasons, you know. The guy I worked for in Nebraska for the year, he said, yeah, we don't have four seasons here. I said, what do you have? He said, we have two. Winter and the 4th of July. And it's winter again. And it was like that. It was one day of not winter. That's what it felt like. Anyway, so your acting took off.
Yeah.
And took you places.
Absolutely.
You traveled?
I've traveled the world extensively, thankfully so, which is such a big blessing.
Did you do comedy at all?
I did. So the last show that I was on right before I got pregnant with Lennox May was called Single Ladies, and it was the urban version of Sex in the City, and I was the Carrie Bradshaw.
Oh.
So the curly-haired fashionista who was looking for love in all the wrong and right places, you know, the wrong places, but some were right, but you couldn't see it kind of thing.
Oh.
And so there was a lot of comedy involved.
Is both.
It was both. I mean, not heavy drama. There was like interpersonal relationship with my girlfriend's kind of drama and drama with men, but no serious, no death or anything like that. So it was all really lighthearted. No murder. All really lighthearted, fun kind of escapades running around single women all over Atlanta.
Yeah. Can we still see it somewhere?
Yeah, you can still download it on iTunes. And it's so funny. I talk about this sometimes. It's the number one question that I get asked on social media is, when is Single Ladies coming back?
Oh.
Like, it's not coming back, unfortunately.
Never say never.
Everything comes back.
Yeah.
Give it like 5 years.
I know.
Mr. Ed's coming back.
We had some incredibly diehard fans who have, you know, continued to follow everything that each of us has gone on to do. But they really loved Raquel, who was the character that I played. And she was fun and, you know, had certain aspects of me and very, very different in many ways. And it was really fun to play her and get dressed up. And I got paid to make out with guys every 2 days. It's a new guy in my bedroom. Thankfully, my husband, who was my fiancé, who was my boyfriend when I started the show, he's a director, so he understands it's just work. But
it's just business.
Yeah, it's just business.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to get paid more than $16 an hour to just make out with random people.
It's a different business.
Different kind of business.
Yeah. So now tell us about the platform that you have now, Made.
So Made came around very organically. I got pregnant with Lennox May and decided that I did not want to have a child raised on set in Atlanta for many reasons. And there was still the side of me that felt the need to create. And so I didn't really know that I was content creating. But throughout my pregnancy with her and the stages afterwards, I was kind of documenting the way that I was doing things on social media and Instagram specifically. So I had already had a platform from television. And then my platform started to change. My demographic started to change. My joke is that the male demographic I used to have from Single Ladies, they stood around when my husband was my boyfriend and when I got engaged and even when I got married and almost like through the whole pregnancy. But the minute I started talking about chapped nipples, they were like, I'm out.
Oh, really?
Chapped nipples, breastfeeding.
So if a guy comes up to me at a bar, I'm just like, friend, I'd be like, do you know I have chapped nipples? And he's just going to leave.
He's going to leave. That's a great
Perfect.
One, by the way.
Going to use it.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah, it would totally work at a bar.
You gave us now two pearls of wisdom, one before we started recording and then that one.
So, my community shifted and what I gained was an incredible group of women who were coming on and talking to me or asking me questions about life, relationships, motherhood. And it was this huge range. It was... Oh, I'm pregnant also right now, or I'm planning, or we're trying, or I just got married, or we just got engaged, or I haven't met him yet, you know, or her yet. And so it was very interesting, and I was spending a lot of my time talking to people on social media, women, about what they were going through or, you know, what did I do or why did I make those choices? You know, a lot of questions about home birth and why did I choose to breastfeed for so long and when did you start pumping and why we co-sleep and don't sleep train? And I was doing a lot of cooking as well. And they really wanted to know about food choices I was making for my daughter. She doesn't eat meat, dairy, or gluten. And they started asking for a YouTube channel or a cooking book or, you know, some sort of book. And that seemed very intimidating to me. And I figured out that I needed to create something where I could have content live more than 24 hours and that it could be evergreen so that I could send people, when the question kept coming back to me, any certain question, I could just say, hey, here's a link. And so that was how the idea to create Made came along. And obviously, it's a completely different field than anything that I've ever done my whole life. So I spent a year and a half just sitting back and watching people that I admired do what they do and figure out why or how the market worked and, you know, what was it going to be? Was it going to be a YouTube channel or was it going to be, you know, what it is today? And then I spent a good almost year designing it.
Wow.
You can really tell when you go on the website, because I spent quite a lot of time there. I was like researching it, but then I just stayed.
Thank you.
Because I liked a lot of the stuff, like especially the recipes.
Thank you.
And the authenticity that you show with your daughter on the website and just how cute like the two of you are together. And it feels very homey when you go to the website and you're looking at stuff. It feels like, oh, yeah, I can do this. It doesn't feel like, oh, she's like this person I'll aspire to be. It feels like, yeah, we're here together and we're doing this.
Thank you. That means so much to me because I put a lot of love in it. And the one thing that I want to always project is that I don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And this is the way I do things. And these are the reasons why I think they're great. And maybe you can take something from it or all of it or a small piece of it. And see how you implement it into your life and how it works for you, because everyone's different, mm-hmm. and every mother mothers differently. But at the end of the day, we're all looking, you know, we're all aiming for the same thing, to do the best by our children or to do the best at our jobs. And so it's important to me that people come and that they feel like the information is equivalent to them in their lifestyle and not beyond what they can grasp. And not beyond what they can, you know, financially do. So when we talk about products and, you know, fashion or makeup items, we want to talk about things that are clean, healthy, and affordable.
Definitely. And also checking out the face care stuff. I was like, it's going to be $500 creams. Like, I just know it. Because a lot of people who run a site like this, that's what they show you. It's unobtainable. But you have a whole range of stuff. And I was like, oh, I could buy like three of these things and it'd be fine.
Yeah,
so that's great.
Totally important to me. I wanted to talk to the women that look like me who come from places like where I came from and, you know, talk to my mom. Like, my mom would, like, slap me if I had a $500 cream on the site. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And also,
money?
Like, I wouldn't do that, like, $500 on a cream. It's, like, ridiculous. Why?
Yeah. I love the pictures of you and Lennox, especially. They're so beautiful. Mm-hmm. They're just, you can feel the energy coming out of them, even when they look like they're done in a studio. I know that half the time you're just selfieing. And it's something I noticed also actually about models in general. Like, models look good in person, and then it's not about that. Somehow the camera just loves you guys. Mm-hmm. I remember one time walking in my office, somebody who was she was pregnant and nauseous and vomity and just got a massage, and then she came out and put on her sunglasses and walked out, and we saw from the window there were like 75 paparazzi downstairs. So she's like, would you mind walking me to my car? So I walked her out to her car, and there are a million pictures the next day, and she looks like she just came out of hair and makeup, and I look like, I can't say it. I was like, the camera just loves you. Like, it doesn't matter. Anyway, the pictures, and beyond just the face value of how you guys look sweet and cute, it's the love. Like, you can just feel the bond coming out of the picture.
Thank
and
you.
And then I run home and I'm like, all right, I could be a better dad. You know?
Aww.
I gotta get close to my kids like that. And then also, I started walking on the treadmill, and then the first time I did a 10K, nobody warned me about this, on the treadmill, I got chapped nipples. So...
Wow, there's a lot of things that can cause that, I hear.
Yeah, so now I guess I could say
I have a good cream for
that.
For
the remedy, the $5
cream. I'm going to send you a link.
This is why she made the website.
Yeah. And now guys aren't hitting on me. So it's
perfect.
True.
It's perfect.
It works.
It works.
All right. I want to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about your all the things you just talked about, pregnancy, childbirth, postpartum, feeding. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Denise Vossi. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're back with Denise Fossey. Let's talk about pregnancy.
Yay.
Were you like ready to get pregnant? Did it just happen?
No, I don't think you're ever ready. I mean, I guess some women definitely plan for that kind of thing in life. I'm definitely not one of those women. Well, the truth is Lennox May is the product of our friend's 40th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Exactly. She lives in London, and the following like couple months afterwards when she came back to LA, I was like, so you got that beautiful like diamond watch for your birthday. Look what I got.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, how did you find out?
Gosh, let me see. I remember taking 6 pregnancy tests. Both times, by the way.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I'm like,
because they were positive and you didn't believe it?
Or yeah, totally. I was like, how did this happen to me? Me? How did this happen? Second child, product of Beyonce and Jay-Z's last concert. Oh. Yeah, what was it? Oh, you know what? I was seeing an acupuncturist regularly for, I was getting these like small little veins, like, and there were things that were bothering me, like for pure reasons of vanity. Mm. And my facialist at the time sent me to a acupuncturist. And she was very funny because I walked in her office and one whole side of the wall was photos of babies. And I was like, what is going on here? And she's like, oh, I am also, besides a Eastern, you know, acupuncturist, I am also a like OBGYN.
What?
Well, because she helps women get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so I've sent so many people to her over the years because she's legit. But I remember like the first 4 or 5 sessions, she was like, don't you think you should get pregnant? And I was like, no, I think that we should clear up this like little blood vessel on my face so that, you know, I don't have this thing. Let's focus on the goals here, okay? And so she was, you know, giving me the teas and all the stuff to like regulate my system, because my entire life I've often been very late with my menstrual cycle. And so for me, it was no big deal if I was 3 weeks late. I've actually had at some point in my life had second degree amenorrhea, which is when you are missing your menstruation cycle for a long period of time. So, yeah. So I didn't realize that like my period was like 5 weeks late. It's wow. Like, that's totally normal. I mean, I'm so easily thrown off if we travel, if I exercise, if I always exercise 3 times a week and then I do a 4th exercise, I could, you know, be days late or a week late. And, but she was, you know, in order to get your body ready, it's going to take time. We're going to like give you the teas and give you the, you know, put the needles in all the right places to get all. She said I had like a lot of stagnant points. And yeah, so that's what happened.
So she works.
So I was, you know, drinking some horrible tasting like wood of bark. And and then went to like the livest party ever and like sat across some like really fun people and drank all night and had fun. And Then a couple of weeks later, she was like, you should probably take a test. And I was like, oh, no, you know, that's why I'm here. I'm here for you to regulate this stuff. She's like, yeah, but you should probably take a test.
Well, she knew. She just knew. Pulses or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. And Anthony had, my husband had started seeing her. Similarly to, like, I started seeing you, and then I'm like, oh, this guy's great. You gotta go see him, too. And, you know, we'd go in, and he was getting cupping, and I was getting the acupuncture. And one appointment, he went without me because I couldn't make it for some reason. And she was like, I really think your wife needs to take a test. So he was like, take a test. So we had just finished building our home. It took 3 years from the ground up. Oof. We didn't have very much in it. Like, we just had just started moving the boxes. The only thing I remember was we were hanging out by the pool, like, but with no chairs or anything, but, like, with a bottle of champagne. Like, this is our house, finally. And I went into the bathroom, took a test, and was like, no. This is not even right. And it was, like, really faint. And it was, like,
it wasn't
true. They're kind of confusing. And it was, like, it's kind of, I was, like, this test is stale. It must be an old test. It's an old test. I bought an old test. And so I sent him out for more. He's like, now? I'm like, yeah, now. He's like, but we're going to, like, True Food for dinner. And I'm like, well, I'll take it in the bathroom. He's like, at True Food? I'm like, yeah, I eat there all the time. It's like home. It's like our second home. And
they have more furniture.
Yeah,
than
exactly. They do. Yeah, exactly. They actually have a place to sit. And get me the one that says, you
pregnant.
Know. Yeah. What are those things
not
called?
Just
like
line.
Now. Well, nowadays, I mean, they tell you that. That time, they had the ones that told you, like, would print out how many weeks you are. So I was in the bathroom with four tests. One of them went
bad. True Food.
Okay, True Food in the, like, handicap stall. Like, oh, God, please don't anybody come in here. Who needs this bathroom? Taking one at a time. And one was a dud. So there are duds. And the other three all came out 5 weeks pregnant. And I was like,
wow.
Oh, sorry. I was like, oh, boy. Brace myself.
This is real.
This is so real. And came outside and was like, sir, you're going to have to cancel that glass of wine.
happening. You told him right away.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I wonder, the person in the stall next to you, there's a little trickle, then another little trickle, another little trickle. That's a lot of control.
I was putting them on the floor. I was like, this can't be right. This can't be right. Oh, my God, this
like
one, too.
Scientist. Yeah.
And then I still called my OBGYN the next day, and I said, guys, I think I need to come in for, I'll never, this is the best. I think I need to come in for some blood work. They were like, why? I'm like, you know, I took a pregnancy test. Exactly. I was like, I took a pregnancy test. Well, actually, I took 5 pregnancy tests. Well, I took 6, but only 5 came out. And they all say that I'm pregnant, but it's like impossible. So I think that maybe she's like, what do you mean? When was your first day of your last month? I was like, I don't really remember that. But, and she was like, okay. I was like, but I will say this. I've been drinking some, like, you know, Eastern medicine teas, and it's probably just, like, throwing my pH balance off, right? And she was like, And then I go, oh, wait, I remember when I had my period last, and I told her. She's like, oh, honey, you're not coming in for, like, a pregnancy test. You're coming in for your first prenatal exam. And I was like, what? She's like, you're definitely pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, I love your house.
Thank you.
I didn't know you built it from the ground up. Oh, yeah. I love your house. It's such a unique design.
Thank you. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears in that joint.
And now furniture as well.
Yeah. Hopefully. Now we have a lot. Yeah, no, we have a lot of furniture.
How was your pregnancy, your first pregnancy?
My first pregnancy was...
When, once you admitted to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, once I came to terms. You know, it's funny because, you know, you go through this roller coaster of, like, oh, my gosh, I'm pregnant. And then you kind of forget about it. And then you're like, oh, even with this one, like, oh, no, I'm pregnant. And then the worries. And I remember when I sat myself down around 16 weeks and was like, you need to stop worrying about this because you're going to cause something to happen. Mm. And so between, like, 16 and 22 was great. And then I started to have a lot of back issues and, you know, wonderful things that were physically ailing me but brought me to Elliot. So.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. So, I mean, besides...
I'm sorry you had back issues. But
yeah, yeah, besides, like, the tailbone issue, which is the original, and the sciatica, and then the SPD.
Yeah.
Besides that, it was lovely. No, it was great. I mean, I wasn't that sick with that pregnancy. It was, you know, just a couple of weeks of... that nauseous feeling, but I wasn't, like, vomiting. And I exercised every single day, and I had a ton of energy. And I kept, you know, I traveled extensively when I was pregnant.
I do remember that.
We went to Prague. Like, we went to Thailand. We went a bunch of places. And
you did not let it slow you down.
No, no. It was really great. And I was very healthy, thankfully, so.
How did you, like, feel about the body changes?
It's funny. I wrote something today about that.
Oh.
I think that it was very scary, much more scary the first pregnancy because, you know, the second pregnancy, you know what to expect.
Mm.
The first pregnancy, it's like you're at your tiniest and you see yourself go to places that you have never seen before. And I definitely had a couple of phone, you know, called my husband crying a couple times from dressing rooms. Like, I can't find anything to wear to this thing. And, you know, it's just like nothing fits and everything looks horrible on me. And in many ways, I think that a lot of the naive part of about being pregnant is like, that's so unimportant.
Mm.
You know, you figure it out. And towards the, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, then I was just like, you know what? Just wear something tight. Just just wear, stop trying to hide it because you end up looking bigger than you are. So so I ended up wearing a lot of, like, tight clothes. And then that kind of made me feel better somehow.
Did you, I mean, at the end, did you like it? Did you look at it and feel like, oh, this is cool?
I mean, I look at pictures and think about what our body does as women and think that it's, you know, it's obviously like nothing short of a miracle and absolutely amazing. And I look at pictures of pregnant women, including myself, and go, wow, that's such a beautiful moment. But I was I was and I am not the woman who gets in front of the mirror and is like, oh, my God, I look so hot pregnant. Like, by the way, it's crazy how many men will try to kick it to you when you're pregnant. It's like
chap nipples and all.
I don't think they know about the chap nipples yet. But like
that could be a T-shirt.
Don't look my way.
I'll
cut you with my nipples. But like, no, it's I was like, this is just so weird.
What is the technique of coming
no,
onto you?
No, I mean just like driving by in a truck and honking and like, all, and just be like, this is really gross.
Yeah, that's weird.
But after talking about it with girlfriends and on social media, it is not, and with my husband's guy friends, it's not uncommon. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, animalistically.
Yeah.
Fertility is survival.
Yeah. Okay, so that's so sexy.
I don't know if it's sexy. I'm just
look
wondering.
Look at you reproducing.
Wow. Look at you keeping the world going. That's so hot.
That is a fertile babe right there.
I mean, I'm Jewish, so I look at it like, gosh, oh, shoot, the price of housing is going to go up again. More people. But I think in other animal species, it's like that too. I'm not just humans.
Hmm. I have to look that one up.
Yeah.
So when you're looking in the mirror and you're feeling fat and gross, nothing fits me, just be like, no, I am sexy AF right
now.
Yeah. To most people.
Yeah. No, I've definitely learned not to feel gross about it. It's funny because I just wrote something for this brand about, you know, self-love for Valentine's Day. And mm-hmm. what I chose to talk about was my body right now. And as it continues to grow and I continue to get uncomfortable, because there's also that feeling, it's not even all about how you look. It's also how you feel. And it's like, mm-hmm. gosh, I feel so, and not large like I'm big, but large like I can't move and I can't bend and I can't, you know, you park too close to this, someone next to you, or someone parks,
oh,
even worse, somebody,
Trader Joe.
Somebody parks next to you.
You can't get out because
you
physically
can't get out. And
yeah.
you're so upset. And like, you have, then you have to attempt to climb out of
the other side.
The other side, okay? Oh, no. And by the way, when you have a toddler, at least when I was alone, I was only making a fool out of myself to myself. Now my toddler's like, mom, are you okay? Whoa, mom. I wake up, she's like, whoa, mom, you're getting really big.
Oh, thanks.
But yeah, it's also, it's uncomfortable. And I wrote something about, like, you know, just remember, you know, try to remember and be kind and use kind words with yourself, because what's happening is so much more important than, you know, the physical, the way I look. And it's like my body is nurturing and feeding and protecting a human life. And at the end of the day, my body will not ever be, you know, I won't ever be 125 pounds ever again. And my body won't be what it was pre-two pregnancies,
right.
but
mm-hmm.
either will my heart, so.
Ooh.
Yeah, but it's also like it's none of it's permanent. Like, life's not permanent. It's all just a big stage of ebb and flow.
Absolutely.
Also, but once you have the baby, you won't have anything to hold your books up anymore You like your food?
Cookies.
I mean, the food mass on the belly is crazy. Started early with this one.
So what you're saying, people trying to pick up guys, they should just get that bump.
Yeah.
Right? And just wear it underneath their glove.
So get the bump.
Yeah.
And if you want to pick somebody up.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to pick somebody up, then just like put a sign on your back that says, I have chapped nipples.
I have chapped nipples. Yeah.
Two products we're going to come up with later this season.
A whole yeah. So, first of all, I can't help but think if your Chinese medical person could help me because I'm late all the time. My wife gets so mad. Anyway, moving forward, when did you think about birth, like what you wanted to do for your birth?
After I found out I was pregnant.
Well, you didn't know you were going to be pregnant. It was just a
party. The thing is, if I'm being completely honest.
Sure, why not?
I was never the girl who was like, you know, I'm going to get married and I'm going to have two kids and they're going to be named da-da-da and da-da-da. And I'm going to have one boy and one girl and like it's going to be, or I'm going to have two twins and I hope it's this and they're going to be like denim and lace. And you know, I don't know. Slice and twice. Yeah. I was not that girl. I grew up and I was like, I'm going to work and take over the world and help people. When I walked down the aisle, when I started to walk down the aisle, my best friend turned around to me and said, oh, my God, I can't believe you're really doing it. And I was like, really? Well, I've only been planning this wedding for a year and a half, and we're all here.
Yeah.
She's like, I know, but you're actually going to get married. Because I was always the girl who was like, why? Why do you need those things in life? And my focus was very different. And when I was pregnant, the entire time I told my husband, you know, I'm going to go back to work after this child, you know? And he was like, sure, if you want to, but you just might not want to. And I was like, yeah, of course. Like, I got to get to work. I got to do things and da-da-da. And I, you know, had this whole other plan. And it was definitely around my career as I, you know, you start working at 12. Like, that's what you end up just, like, focusing on so long. So when I became pregnant, there was also this level of shock because I didn't have any preconceived ideas of how I wanted my pregnancy to look.
That's a funny way to put it.
Yeah.
Preconceived idea. No, thank you.
Yeah, and no thoughts about a birth plan or, you know, gosh, well, I grew up in New York. In New York, all you hear about is like scheduled C-section and a little tummy tuck and keep it moving, you know? And then I started to really think about, like, well, C-sections, like, I looked that up. I was like, that's like a really big procedure right there. You only want to do that if you need to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great, obviously. It doesn't matter which way you give birth, but if you can avoid having, you know, all your organs taken out and shifted, why not? And so that changed right away. And I was like, okay, definitely don't want, like, versus, like, my best girlfriend who our girls were born East Coast, West Coast, 12 hours apart. And initially, we literally called each other to tell each other we were both pregnant with a third girlfriend on the phone. And was like, no, I just took my test. No, I just didn't. She was like, and she
That's
was,
so cute.
It was so funny. And she was like, I'm getting a scheduled C-section.
That was like, hands down, she was like.
She was like, and I was able to talk her out of that 6 months down the road. And she did her birth completely different than we parent differently. You know, she was in the hospital and the epidural. And that's great because her daughter's like beautiful and healthy and there were no issues. And she was very comfortable in that. That's what made her comfortable. But,
I think everybody has to give birth where they feel comfortable.
Yeah,
in the way feel comfortable. We have so many choices.
So that's the most important part.
At least
right?
here in LA, we have literally a million choices.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And Anthony does not have a thing for – does not like hospitals.
Oh, yeah.
His mom passed away in one. Mm-hmm. And I've never been a fan of doctors either. You know, I think that they're great in emergency situations, and Western medicine is a blessing to have. But I think that there are a lot of things that we can do before we get to the point of needing those interventions, and that has to do with really healing yourself and feeding yourself homeopathically and holistically and naturally. And so – it seemed like aiming for a home birth was more our speed because we just tend to do everything more Eastern.
Were you worried about the pain? Because you don't really get,
you know,
drugs at home.
I wasn't worried about it because you don't really know what it's like.
But
you
know, like, you watch TV and movies.
Yeah, but you think about it. But like, I'm an actress, so I know I could act that scene out, right? Uh-huh. So
I always wonder because I do feel like if I'm a doula at a birth with an actor – You guys seem to take direction pretty well. And so you're like, now do this. And you're like, okay. Whereas other people have a harder time. Yeah, reacting to the feedback.
That's funny. Yeah.
So you hired a midwife.
We did.
And
immediately.
A doula.
Yes and no. Someone became my doula. She was doing just yoga with me a couple times a week and meditation at my house. And at the time, it just felt right that I didn't bring another person in and asked her if she would be willing to work in the space of a doula.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you did a kick butt childbirth education class.
Oh, I did, by the way. No lie, because that's the reason my husband felt confident in the situation that ended up happening, because we sat through so many classes, and when we were at Elliot's, like, 9-hour class, he was like, wait, there's another day of that class? And I was like, yep, bring your snacks. And then afterwards, you know, he kept joking the whole time, like, if this baby needs to happen on the side of the road, I'm ready. I'm going to have my shoelaces. I know what to do, like, the whole nine, because I took this class. And
I did one little presentation called Roadside Delivery as part of my wife and I's childbirth education class. And so it's a fun little thing. Like, if you just happen to have the baby in an elevator and nobody's there, this is what you would.
Well, I would want to be prepared. Like, I want to know every single situation where, like, this baby could be delivered. That's my personality.
I mean, the basic premise is that elephants do it, you know, without a whole
lot.
Yeah,
but elephants are cool, you know?
Well, people are cool. It's more about what not to do.
We have more resources than that.
Than what to do.
But yeah, that was his favorite part, and it became this ongoing joke. And as you know,
well, let's see what happened. How did your labor start?
So I had something called a precipitous. Is that how
you had prodromal?
What's that?
First, that long.
Oh yeah.
Pre.
So right. So no one really explained that to me, mm-hmm. but it started 3 weeks before she came. And so we had our first incident.
It didn't go on for 3 weeks.
No, it didn't go on. No, it didn't go on.
3 week labor.
But no, God,
I'm done.
No. They wouldn't let me keep going. But, you know, it started up, and then we called my mom in New York and, like, ripped her out of her office and was like, on a plane right now, it's happening. She flew across country. In the meantime, I was on the floor like, I don't know if I could do this. Oh, my God. I think I have back labor and all this stuff like that. And, like, Elliot came in. And I think you worked on me for, like, 2 hours before mm-hmm. you finally were able to put me to sleep.
That's what happened, because you look like you're in active labor. You're having contractions pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. They're, like, pretty intense. And you were, like, I think maybe a little dehydrated. And then.
Yeah, because I was vomiting so much.
Right. And you couldn't drink. Because it just come back out.
I couldn't hold anything down. And we tried walking. We tried everything. And it turns out I was having some back spasms on top of everything. And then finally
when I started working on your feet, you passed
footwork,
out.
Footwork, yeah. You remember that. And then I finally that was like 7 hours.
Yeah.
It was intense. It was long.
So it's like labor, but it's not.
Yeah, prodromal this was sort of that kind of pattern where it's literally looks and feels like labor, but nothing's really, no progression
is
happening.
It's so weird. So that stopped, and then a couple of days later, I had another 5-hour incident. Late in the middle of the night, and then that stopped, and then...
Did the midwives, they came for at least one of them.
They were on the phone for like an hour with that one. And
did they come for the first one?
Afterwards.
They came after the first episode.
After to check me. Yeah, after to check me.
And then the second one, they were on the phone with you.
Right. And then there was a third one, but that was only 2 hours, and I didn't tell anybody.
You're like, I'm done.
I'm like, everyone's like the girl who cried wolf. No one's going to come to my rescue when I need them. And so, and kind of, sort of, maybe that did happen. And so the second one, I just laid on the floor with my dog. I don't even think I woke up Anthony. And then the morning that she was born, which is funny enough because she was 12 days past her guesstimated due date. And my girlfriend, as you remember in New York, her water broke on her due date.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, and the girls were born on the same day. So I am home, like, texting with her husband going, oh, my gosh, I'm so happy. She's getting ready to go. And I turn to my mom, like, can you believe this?
She's going to be.
What is going on? And my mom is like, well, you're always late. You're never on time. Like, what do you expect? And I'm like, thanks, Mom. She's like, Victoria is always 15 minutes early. And then the funniest thing is, so that night, Anthony comes into the room, and I'm, like, in a towel, bouncing on the ball, dry pumping, which is supposed to help stimulate childbirth. I've got the bong going, you know, the thing that makes a sound, and like the yogi music going, and I'm like bouncing up and down. And he walks in and he kind of walks out a little bit, and he's like, well, "What is going on?" And I'm like, "Are you committed to having this child or what?" And he's like, "What?" I'm like on another zone. I'm like, "This is crazy. Victoria's water broke. She's gonna have that baby tomorrow. This is like we're like getting close to when we would be forced." Mm-hmm. To go into a hospital, even though I was still in great health and great shape to have a home birth, and the baby was now in a good position. But because there are laws about it, mm-hmm. then I would have to go in. And so while I was very open to going into a hospital if that's what the baby needed, I didn't want to feel the pressure of having to do it because the law said, you know, on day 14. So he walks in and I'm like, yeah. And after this, we're going for a walk on the hill. And he's like, it's 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, get the dogs ready. And he's like, D, what's wrong with you? I'm like, and then we're having sex. And you're doing the perineum massage too, all of that. And we did all of that. And in the morning, my mucus plug finally came out.
Right.
And then I saw my midwives. And then I came home. And then I tried that shake, but I couldn't hold that down. The castor oil.
Oh.
Mm. I tried that like in a
mango.
Who
can hold that down?
Ugh. Well, it was just like immediate.
Oh.
And then I laid down and like 2 hours later, I started to feel something. And my Weimaraner, who, bless him, had been with me for, you know, 13 years at the time, was rolling around crazy. Like,
oh, really?
I was like, oh my God, he knows. It's definitely happening. Like, I could tell from his behavior what I was feeling and how he was. And, like, he wasn't letting anybody next to me. And I could see my husband outside in the yard taking a call. And I was like, it's time. And then she was, from that moment to, like, doing that one little stitch I needed to get, probably 2 hours front to back, I pushed maybe 3 times. And my midwife didn't make it.
Wow.
My midwife
was
just right there. It was me
and
Lisa, who was acting as my doula.
Right.
My husband and my mom.
And your Weimaraner.
And your baby.
Yep.
And your doggy.
And
were you in a bath or were you just...
So I was in the shower first, hot running water, and then I moved into the bathtub, and that's kind of where you like go through the bipolar situation where you're like, I love you. I love you so much, hubby. Yes, massage my back. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. And he's like, okay, sorry. I'm like, oh, can you just put a little pressure right here. Not like that. And you're like literally like Jekyll and Hyde, poor like partners in that situation. And then I was like, I really feel like the baby's coming. I really think the baby, and everyone was, you know, telling me, you know, okay, the midwives were like, okay, we're going to make our way. And you know, and I was like, oh, I just feel like this baby's coming, guys. I feel like it's coming. And my mom even started saying, you know, all the doula phrases she was reading in the books and stuff. And then I was like, well, then I need to use the potty. That, you know, I potty because I have a 4-year-old. But I need to use the bathroom. And so I went into the bathroom. Lisa was like, do you need some help? I'm like, no, I'm okay. I could, you know. And I was getting ready for Elliot to come over. So I had like, you know, shorts and like a sports bra, something appropriate. And like, I took my shorts off and I went to sit on the toilet and the baby's head came out and went back in. So it was like, doop, doop. And I grabbed my vagina and it came out. So I was like, the baby's coming. And I was like, so like crazy because there was no midwife. And I was like, it's happening,
guys.
Did
that hurt? Were you like, ow?
No, you're so freaked out. Because I literally saw her head as I looked down.
She's like, hello, like, goodbye.
You look down, you're so pregnant, and you don't know what's going on. You're like, let me not miss the toilet, because if I fall, I'm not going to get back up. So, like, you look down, and, like, I look down to squat, and, like, her head was, like, there, and then it wasn't there. And I was like, so I grabbed, because I thought if I walked back out there,
she
might fall
out.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And so Lisa was like, okay, everybody calm down. Would you like to go back into the water? Because I have a Roman tub, so, like, we could have done it there. Or do you want to go to your bedroom, which was right there too? And I just looked at the spot on the floor and I didn't say anything, and I just sat down on the floor and laid down there. They put some pillows. It was just like, this is where it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen on your bathroom floor. Like, not the cleanest room in the house, not where we anticipated it would happen. There's that whole home birth kit you like burn, like you put the blankets in the oven to like sanitize. None of that. It was none of that.
Bathroom floor.
Yeah. And then my midwife was on the phone and she's like, I'm right here, honey. I'm like, Mom, she's right there. Go get the door. And she's like, well, I'm Lincoln. I'm right here. And Lincoln, gosh, that could be forever. So I, like, chuck the phone across the room. I was like, she's not here. She's not going to be here. And we pushed three times and
that was it.
She was. And Lennox May was born in call. She was born in her amniotic sac.
And were you ready for that or were you like, what?
I was like in another world, to be honest with you. I thought I was crying, but you see the pictures and I'm not crying, but I was crying on the inside, but I was not crying on the outside. And she came so fast that I literally looked like I was hit by a truck. Like, I don't have those beautiful, I just had a baby, I'm in this glorious mama mode photos. I look scared. It was just really, really fast. And
but luckily you had done roadside delivery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you know how to handle the in-call as well?
You know what? We didn't, but she's such a spirit. I mean, this is who she is to this day. She came out, my husband caught her, and she went like this. Like, she stretched her arms and popped her own sack.
Wow.
Was not crying, was big blue-eyed, like wide-eyed. And they put her on my belly, and she went right to the boob.
Oh, wow.
And it was like straight out of a movie. And we were just all looking at her like, who is this child? And I was like, she's not crying. What's wrong? Is everything okay?
She went and made dinner.
Yeah. She walked into the kitchen.
Since that day, she's been running my life.
Made herself a drink.
So this is the best part about Elliot. Where were you, Elliot?
I was parked in front of your house.
For a long time.
For a while.
Yeah.
So Anthony called me, and he said, things seem to be picking up.
The ball's moving.
So I was like, are you calling because you want me to come over? He said, I think so. I can't tell. I'm going to ask Denise and call you right back. And then he didn't call back. And then I called and he said, well, if it's not the real thing, we don't want to waste your time and make you come across town. So maybe we should wait and see what happens. I'm like, I'll do whatever you want. If you want me to come, I'll come. If you don't want me to come, I'll come. But then I hung up and I thought, it's getting close to 4 o'clock. It was like, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if I don't go now and then you do want help, I'm not going to make it there for you.
You have such a good memory. She was born at 4:17.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to go. I'll park near your house and wait and see. And if he calls, he calls. And if he doesn't call, he was said, I'm going to call you right back.
Yeah. We got a little preoccupied there.
So then I parked in your house. Maybe there's like a little grocery on the corner. So I was like, I'll go get something to eat, have a little snack, maybe some caffeine in case you need me alone. And I come back in. I'm drinking. I'm eating. I'm like, let me send him a question mark. I just send him a question mark. He's like, we have the baby. Long story. Talk later. But he doesn't know I'm right out in front of the house. And then I see the midwife going up here.
Coming. Arriving.
Going into your house. I'm like, and then I was like, okay, I don't think they need me at this moment.
You're like, they had the baby. The midwife just arrived. I'm going to exit the situation.
That text. We have the baby. It's fine.
What's your plan for number two here?
So we, of course, want to have another home birth. And so if everything looks well and healthy, and we just...
Where do you want me to park this time? Is there a better spot?
Or... We have to figure that out, because I know you're not taking that many house calls these days, which I'm very happy about for your children.
Thank you very much.
But I also...
But you're
also going to need you.
You guys. I'll be there.
Thank you. We have that on tape, right?
Yeah.
We just had the anatomy scan, which was, was quite scary. Everything with this pregnancy is so much scarier, which
what?
I think is ironic, because I wouldn't have thought that beforehand. But then when I got pregnant, I think...
Did you take six tests?
Six? No, yeah, I did.
You did
I did. Second time. 1,000%, I swear. Uh-huh. Lennox was like, what are those things? And I was like, Lennox, go back in your room. There is this... You're just like more naive during your first pregnancy, and you don't know as much and you haven't seen as much. And between the time that I had Lennox and the time that I got pregnant with this child, I've seen so many friends go through so many different versions of miscarriages and children. I mean, one of my best girlfriends lost her child 2 months after birth. Some friends who have one but have not been able to get pregnant the second time. I've seen a very close friend have a late termination 5 months in. And you just realize how precious it is. And all of a sudden, the fear of something going wrong, it has been very, very heightened for me, because I know that it's not a given. It's not like, mm-hmm. oh, you get pregnant and you're going to like have 9 months. They might be great. They might not be great. Just caught myself from cursing. they might not be great, but then you're going to have this child and it's going to be blissful. And that's kind of what you walk around with, I feel like, your first pregnancy. And the second pregnancy, you know that it might not happen that way, and that if it does, it is truly a blessing and a gift. So we've had moments where we were really very nervous, and not because if anything came back and said we should be nervous. It's just because of what we've seen. It's
swelling through your head.
Yeah. So we just had our anatomy scan, and everything looks great. We know the sex of the baby, but we're not telling.
Ooh. I know what it is, too.
You do? You felt it? You know? He asked me, by the way, Anthony said, did Elliot tell you what the baby was? I was like, Anthony, he can't see inside my belly. No. He's great, but he's not that great.
I can tell you what it is. I mean, I'm usually right about 25% of the time. So,
are you going to look at my ear?
Hmm? No.
I heard you want to look at someone's ear when you want to know. Your wife told me that. Yeah,
she did?
Yeah.
She's messing with you.
I got 50-50 on ours.
So what do you think I'm having?
Guessing what we're having. Obviously, you're having a girl or a boy. I'm not sure.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if everything remains, you know, good to go, healthy, and the baby, you know, it's always going to be what's right for the baby, and we never want to jeopardize that. So as long as we continue going down this path, then we will have a home birth.
I didn't even get to talk about all the things that you do for the community.
Yeah, so
you
much.
Do. And we're out of time. But
I'll come back.
I'm grateful. Good. I'm very grateful when kind-hearted people make more babies, because it counteracts, like, the bad news, you know, when you listen to the news and it's like, dun-dun-dun, crisis, world coming to end. And I'm like, Denise and Anthony aren't making another kid. It'll be okay.
It'll be okay.
You'll save us.
What's the best way to find you online?
My Instagram, at Denise Fassi. And, you know, go check out the site, maid.co, M-A-E-D. And I'm around. You can catch me in a DM for sure.
M-A-E-D.
M-A-E-D.
What's behind the name?
So made meaning lots of different things, homemade, made from love, and Lennox, May, M-A-E, and D for Denise.
For Denise. Aww.
And really, my daughter, she's really made me feel like who I am supposed to be. The experience of having someone to care for on that level has really changed my perspective on life, as it should. So
I'm terrible at spelling, so I'm happy that you spelled it M-A-E-D. Thank you. I get it right on the first try. All right. Juliet, thanks for joining us again.
Yep, and absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you have suggestions for topics you want to hear about, send them to info@informedpregnancy.com.
Give me the news, I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will, I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.